Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be back with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So just first up, could you just give us a quick rundown of what happened in New York on Monday?
We had a 27-year-old man who had been resident in the US for 8 years, had a green card, had married a couple of years ago, had sort of gotten by, wasn't a great success, having originally come from Bangladesh. But, you know, you have to say, compared with many other people, had lots of opportunities. For some reason, he's reported to have radicalized online. It may have been as little as a year or so ago. He began researching how to make a bomb. He doesn't seem to have had much guidance, or at least he was being guided. He wasn't a very good student, because he made a pipe bomb, filling a pipe with match heads, sealing the ends of the pipe. But the ends of the pipe blew off when he detonated the explosive charge with a 9-volt battery. And it burnt him and hurt some others, but it didn't kill anyone, thankfully. The reality, however, is he appears to be the first attempted suicide bomber in America in a very long time, if not ever. And he does claim to have been acting in the name of Islamic State or ISIS, and appears to be willing to give his life in an attack. So it's very much a relief that nothing worse happened, but we shouldn't downgrade the possibility of what has been attempted.
Yeah, it's definitely thankful that there were no fatalities. Now, the incident happened at a bus terminal. So how is this going to affect security measures on public transport in the future?
Well, it will certainly trigger a review of public transport spaces. But this is New York City. This is Manhattan. It's already had very heightened security. As a population, it's very resilient. They weren't greatly shaken by this event. But the police, NYPD, and other agencies will be working and have been working all out to try and make public places secure. The reality is there's nothing you can do to make a functioning transport hub, a bus terminal, a train station, really work as well as it's supposed to work and handle the volume of passengers that it needs to and make it completely secure. You can't turn it into an embassy. And so the challenge has to go back to intelligence. And that means not just eavesdropping and surveillance, but also working with communities so that people speak up when they have concerns about those close to them, and also preparing to respond to incidents, which is what we've been discussing in Australia. Particularly this last week, there's been a big conference in Melbourne with the Victoria Police, and they've talked about public address speakers and closed-circuit television cameras, basically so that the police can get on the line and say, look, something's happened, stay away from this location. Stay where you are, don't go towards here, or other advice like that, to try and minimise the impact of somebody. Obviously, if it's an attack like the Manchester Arena attack, an explosion goes off in a crowded public place, there isn't a whole lot you can do to change that. But if somebody's at loose with a vehicle or a gun or a knife, the way you respond, as we saw with the Borough Market attack in London, can make a tremendous difference. So that could have been a much more serious or much more lethal attack were it not for the public and police responding as they did.
Indeed. Now, if you're just tuning into The Daily this morning, we're just speaking with Greg Barton, counter-terrorism expert at Deakin University, about the terror-related incident that occurred in Manhattan earlier this week. Now, Greg, just turning our eyes to kind of Australia at the moment. So with the holiday season upon us, there have been concerns about big crowds and public spaces and the security threat that poses. How is the government preparing for this?
Well, going back to those things we just discussed, a lot of work with intelligence, a lot of work with communities where kids may be targeted by recruiters. So hopefully getting their heads up, somebody may be moving in a dangerous direction or about to act. Nothing guaranteed there, however. And so this other layer of work with how we respond, educating the public, equipping systems, trying to put in place passive security measures. Had this man in New York simply reached for his car keys or taken a rental vehicle, particularly a heavy vehicle, as we saw happen in Manhattan weeks earlier, he almost certainly would have taken lives. Instead, he made a botch of making his own bomb. But a vehicle-based attack is one of the big things that we're worried about. So putting in place passive security, bollards, concrete blocks, eventually, neat bits of architecture, street side furniture such as planter boxes and paving, things that will make it much harder for somebody to drive a vehicle at speed through a crowd and give the crowd time to respond, and just general attentiveness to figuring out where the danger is in crowded public places, and working with those managing those places and working there to be prepared to respond if an incident occurs and hopefully prevent something occurring. And there was a recent policy statement, of course, came out on this question of safety in crowded public places, and that shows, it gives us a peek behind the curtain at what agencies are working at and trying to mitigate risk.
I mean, even already in the city of Sydney, as I saw last night, they've already got bollards up. Now, just quickly on a different note, there was talk earlier that this week that the government is seeking to introduce a law that would prevent children of terrorists from being able to gain citizenship. Just what are your thoughts on this, Greg?
Well, we've done a lot of changes in law with respect to counterterrorism. I think there are 10 tranches of legislation that have come through in the last 3 years. And I've got to say, the way that law has been applied and the way that law has been framed has been mostly very good. But we're fast coming to the point of diminishing returns, in fact, unintended negative consequences, and we keep on thinking the law is the answer. Particularly when it comes to citizenship, there's been a lot of noise from politicians about this, less so from people who actually work in the field, legal experts and police. The trouble is that if somebody has gone abroad with intention of terrorism and they're an Australian citizen, we can't say to Lebanon or to Turkey, we don't want them back, and give them our problems. We've got to take our citizens back. If they have children abroad and try and bring them back, we've got to apply the law as it stands. And those children, by definition, are innocents who are in a place of danger. We can't say, leave them festering in a refugee camp somewhere. They're not our problem. That's just not responsible. And it will undermine our moral legitimacy, and that undermines our public support for working against terrorism. So I don't think we can really do a whole lot in this space. We should be careful of thinking that we can, and careful of politicians using it for personal political gain. I think we need to frame it, though, and recognise that of the 200, say, 50 Australians who have gone to fight, there are at least 89 who have been killed. There may be another 110, 120 still out there. There's been none coming back in the last few years linked to Islamic State, or very, very few attempting to come back. We've got effective measures in place to stop them returning, to arrest them if they try to return. We're not facing a flood at this stage. There's other reasons to be concerned, because when they're offshore, there's still a real presence in the lives of friends and families trying to persuade them. We've seen that with terror plots in Australia. But we shouldn't blow this problem out of proportion. I mean, Europe has a big problem with returning foreign fighters. We don't. And we don't, in particular, have a problem with children born there returning. So let's not try and burn this bridge down before we have to cross it.
Indeed. Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate your insight on this.
A pleasure. Thanks very much.